This is CliffCentral.com.
Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. That time, that place. It is Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader here on CliffCentral.com. I want to welcome you to the show, and we have, I think, quite an interesting show going on today. We've got some guests in the studio, and we have our usual panel, all in full force.
It's always interesting, Chad.
It is. It's always interesting.
Of course
it is. We have fantastic shows here.
Hello, Chad.
Hi. All right, so to my left, SA Speed Queen.
At SA Speed Queen.
There we go. To her left. We
got to your straight, at George Mini.
At George Mini, CEO of Auto Trader. And then we're also joined by the dealer principal of Ducati SA. And as Johnny, is it correct? Arujo.
Yeah, you're there. Arujo.
Arujo, yeah.
I was waiting for that. I wanted to see how you...
Arujo is close enough. Huh?
Is it close enough?
Yeah.
Can we work with that?
Yeah, cool.
Welcome to Auto Central. Lovely to have you in studio here. And hope you found it okay. And,
yeah.
Didn't battle.
Johnny's actually been here before.
Yeah.
Yes,
he came to... He likes to know where he's going and who he's dealing with before he'll actually go on the show. So
that's
he checks
thing.
Things out. Yeah. So we've had Johnny here. And I think you met Gareth and everyone.
No. Gareth, I haven't met yet, no.
Oh, he wasn't here that day.
No.
So we said that we would... we've had Toby here.
Yeah.
And... now it was time to get Johnny on. There's some exciting stuff to talk about.
Yes, no doubt that you're going to lead the conversation with this. You know, I mean, you were recently on a launch, correct?
Correct.
For
Wednesday
one of Ducati's
night.
Products, yeah.
Two, actually.
Two yeah. of them, that's right,
it's
yeah.
It's the Panigale 959 and the new Multistrada.
Multistrada, that's right, yeah.
Bikes Peak.
Yeah.
You
get different versions of the Multistrada. Oh. You get the normal Multistrada, then you get the Bikes Peak, which is the one that we launched. And there's a new one coming out now in May, which is the Enduro. So it's three very totally different models, but all from the Multistrada stable.
But why Bikes Peak?
Bikes Peak was chosen from an American in Colorado. Once a year they have a Bikes Peak race. It's like over the mountains and mountain passes. It's quite aggressive. And that's why they call it the Pikes Peak Race of Colorado. And the Pikes Peak, which was taken from the Multistrada 1200, it's really an upgraded version into a race type of adventure bike. So it's not a racing bike, but it's a race-type adventure bike.
A bit of a crossover sort of approach to it.
A lot of performance parts on it, you know, like Erlen suspension and Timonone pipes on it and so on. So it's quite an aggressive bike, the Bikes Peak. And there's a very small market for it, but people that know and are familiar with the Bikes Peak, they really respect the bike and they like the bike.
Well, I mean, I know the race as well from the rally side of things, and basically it's the race to the skies, and it's regarded as
quite correct,
almost on the same sort of level as almost. Maybe I'm insulting some people here, but like the Dakar, it's one of those sort of Dakar and Le Mans.
Yeah.
It's one of those sort of to win that, and especially in like the open classes, is really a massive accolade. It's not for every. It's not for the faint-hearted.
Yeah. Yeah.
So clearly, that you know, there must be a considerable bike to back the sort of name that they've put on it.
Correct.
Is there an increase in the power?
Not much. More around the mechanical side. You know,
okay.
the performance parts. You know, to handle that type of terrain and
you've got to have good suspension and.
So it's not so much about how fast you can go; it's how quick you can get through.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you use that power?
Oh, yeah,
correct.
Yeah,
I mean, it's more about using that power than actually just having that total brute force available.
Quite correct.
Okay.
But what was quite interesting is, I mean, the Multi, there were two bikes there now. So I want to speak to you, ask you out a little bit more on the other launches and that you have coming up, if we allow to, or just mention it.
No, it's not a problem.
But I mean, it was a perfect example of we had two bikes, but the one got my attention.
Bunny
got it.
Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't the Multistrada. I put money on that.
and I mean, Johnny's been kind enough. I'm going to have it for Valentine's Day. Do you know that, Johnny, this weekend?
Yeah.
So I'll be testing it then. So I've already looked at it. It was quite a very popular bike, and it was interesting what Robert had to say about it in terms of where it falls in. It's not 1,000, yet it's not, it replaced the, is it the?
The 899?
Yeah, the 899 now.
Yeah.
Would you say, is there anything that stands out for you that makes it so much better that everyone is?
I think the Italians, they like to be very different when it comes to superbikes. So they never like to slot a superbike in head on head with some with another make. So that's why I like the big brother now, the 1299 Panigale. It's basically nearly a 1300cc. So yeah, that doesn't slot in with nobody because there is no 1300cc bike. But in on and talking of that, it is a two cylinder, so it does sort of coincide with 1,000cc of other brands, and also with the 959, it's not 1,000cc, and it's like all your other most of your other Japanese brands and so on that are 1,000cc's, and it's not your sort of 750-800cc either, so it's sort of slotted in between. So I think they just like to be on their own in no man's world, you know.
It makes it difficult from a racing point of view, because we were talking this morning also at this conference where I went to that, and we've been saying this on the show, how racing impacts on the technology and what, you know, of the bikes that gets developed for the consumer and the cars that gets developed
everywhere,
etc.
You're seeing it with how the Formula One technology is filtering into production cars now.
100%. So I mean, in this case, I remember years ago when I raced the 749, it was also in terms of the homologation, there's a process there that was quite difficult, but that slotted into the 600 category. So I was the only twin the 749, you know, in and amongst. And also, obviously, the bots class. It would fit in there, but it's a little under the thousands.
Correct.
So where do you think you're going to have a racing market, or is it more consumer?
No. What some guys have been talking about locally, that they'd like to form a 959 race class. You know, like the bots have with the 1299s. Yes. But it doesn't fit into any category of racing, no. It's really just a bike on its own to have fun with, whether it's on the road or track days or that kind of thing. But there is no class for it to race, just like the 1299. That's why our top of the range, which is called the Panigale R, that still remains as 1199, as a 16 and 17 model, simply because of the homologation rules for superbike racing. They won't allow more than 1199 as a twin. So they cannot put the 1299 in the superbike racing. So, it's the 959 just doesn't fit in any form of racing. So you go race it on your own, you know.
Or form your own whole class.
There you go. Form your own class. There you go.
So, Johnny, Ducati's making a bit of a comeback in South Africa. You know, can you tell us a little bit more about that and, you know, what you can share in terms of your plans for the future?
Well, Ducati's been around in South Africa for many, many, many years. And I don't like to elaborate on the past. It's just not my nature to talk about the past, because it has nothing to do with me in any case. So I like to talk of the present and the future. But yeah, look, there's a lot of guys that tried very hard in the past to get it right, and maybe financial reasons or whatever, I don't know. It just didn't work out as well as what the factory wanted it to work out. I might be speaking under correction now, but I know they had one importer, and then that didn't work out, and then they opened it up to four different importers, and that was a bit of a mess because that didn't work out. And eventually the whole thing just boiled down to when Audi Germany April 2012 bought out Ducati, and obviously starting to put their engineering back up into the whole product, and their thinking and their ideas together with the Italians' talents. I think it's a good combination of having the Germans and the Italians building something together, because we can already see the progress in the later new models compared to the previous older generations. They're more reliable, they're just smoother, they're nice, they perform well, lots of electronics on the bikes, and so it goes on. Yeah, so what was your question, by the way?
it was more about the future. So,
So coming back to that, so they approached, to cut a long story of short, Germany approached Toby Fenter, my boss, who's the owner of Porsche South Africa and Kyalami and so on. And they approached him if he wouldn't like to take over Ducati, start a whole new Ducati South Africa, because of the success that he's had with Porsche over the last 20 years. And he just gave me a call one morning and said, "Johnny, would you like to take it on?" I said, "Go for it." I mean, yeah. I've always been a biker all my life. I've always been pretty much 50-50 cars and bikes. But I mean, I've had bikes of my own. My family's had bikes. My brothers have had bikes. My friends. And so it goes on. And I've always been a huge Ducati fan. So that was quite a bonus.
It just sweetens the deal a little
yeah,
bit.
That was, yeah, that was like a real bonus. So yeah, I had no hesitation. I just said, "Let's go for it." And
So what are the things you're kind of telling the consumers? Why should they buy a Ducati, and versus all of the other bikes that are out there?
George is asking because he's going to be in the market soon. I'm just saying.
I could be. Okay. You might know.
No, really.
You never know.
Well, Vilmarie's going to teach me to ride a bike. So
yeah.
That's the first step.
Yeah, well, you've got the right person to teach you, so that's fine. Yeah, George. You know, in the past, and I listen to what people say and what customers say, and it's not my own personal experience. In the past, Ducati had a bit of a bad name in South Africa regarding pricing of the bikes, pricing of parts, how long they waited for parts. Bikes were very fragile and that kind of thing, and so on. As much as people loved the brand, but it was a very, very sensitive type of brand, you know. Mm. That's changed now, I must be honest. And as I said earlier on, since the Germans took over, that whole reliability has just changed, the whole outlook, the whole marketing, the aggressiveness in the markets. I mean, this year alone, we've got 9 new models. Last year, we had 7 new models. So they're really just like branching into every area now. I think what was tough for us this is our third year now in South Africa of doing Ducati. The first 2 years were tough, especially the first year. We had to build that trust back again into the brand. And you don't just build trust overnight. It can take years to build trust.
I mean, we've seen that in the car sector as well. Yeah. You know, some of the French models and the French brands, they've battled with this. But it does seem that this German tie-in with Audi is really doing wonders for 100%. The brand. Not only in terms of the marketing, but just in terms of the brand perception.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rome wasn't built overnight.
I mean, I'm not a big biker. I mean, I like bikes, but I've always looked at the Ducati as almost the Ferrari of bikes.
You're spot on. Yeah. It is the Ferrari of bikes.
You know, and I'm surprised that the brand's battled up to now. But you know, hopefully you take it to new heights.
Yeah, I think what we've achieved in the last 2 years, and I must say we were about 90% there now. We've built a lot of trust into people that lost trust in the brand, and also the support too. Our workshop and our people. Well, I must say we all got a wonderful team. They're really, really awesome. And it's really all just coming together now and people starting to feel good about it. But there's one area where we're still lacking, and I'm going to Cape Town tomorrow, strangely enough, and that the area that we're still lacking, we need to have a couple of branches nationwide, and that's what that is what we're busy with right now.
Oh, so you are looking at expanding the dealer network per se, so that the people out in the outlying areas have got that same sort of service that you're trying to offer the Johannesburg clientele.
We're looking at Cape Town now. That's high priority. Hopefully within the next few months, we should be opening Cape Town.
Wow. But there used to be one, though, Johnny.
Yeah, from the previous guys.
So that was closed completely as well.
And
be an extension, or is it
No, company owned stores.
Okay.
Yeah, not franchise or anything like it. No, our own company owned stores, all controlled by us. And the next step will be in Durban, Mhlanga. The next step will be Pretoria, and then Port Elizabeth, Bloemfontein. So that's our rollout plan within the next 2 years.
So in terms of that particular order, that's a very good spread. In terms of that particular order, does that follow kind of where you see your consumer base? You know, so I noticed you mentioned Pretoria last.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they less likely to buy a Ducati?
No, Pretoria wasn't last. It was fourth. PE and Bloem come after Pretoria.
Oh, okay. So you've done that
there's
homework.
There's money there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but they'd rather drive a Fortuna than a Ducati.
Yeah, I have to. I don't agree with that choice, though, but yes. There's your Waterkloof. There's money.
Yeah. No doubt there's money. But
because there's a Porsche there as well.
You know the strange thing about Pretoria. It's pretty much like Cape Town. I lived in Cape Town for a year, and I went down for many, many years with the previous company I was with. And Cape Town people, they intend to stick to the area that they're in. So if you're from the south, you stick to the south. If you're from the north, you stick to the north, and so it goes on. And Pretoria people are pretty much the same. They don't like coming out of Pretoria.
Except me.
Okay. Except you, yeah. So they also like they're very sort of, what's the right word to
almost
use?
Self-contained.
Yeah. So with Porsche opening in Pretoria, it was a huge impact to them by having Porsche in Pretoria. And yet, I mean, it's a 40-minute drive.
Yeah, one would think that, you know, Joburg would be able to service Pretoria clientele being that close enough.
But you know what it is? It's the inconvenience of the traffic. And that's what it's all about.
It's that N1, yeah.
That's what it's all about. You know, for somebody, I mean, we have a lot of Pretoria customers. And I must admit, for them to come from Pretoria to us in Randburg, it's a schlep.
Yeah,
it's really a schlep.
It's your coffee journey.
Yeah, maybe it's the coffee. Yeah. So yeah, Pretoria is very, very critical for us to have a branch there. Definitely.
I'm quite curious though, because on your servicing as well, you were saying that's also a big part where trust is necessary.
Yeah.
Mm. And I know you have this Ducati Ride plan.
Yeah.
How does that work? Can you tell us a little?
It's something that we put together ourselves. It's called DRP, Ducati Ride Plan, which is a full maintenance contract that you can buy into every bike, to every bike that you buy. At this stage, it's 10,000 Rand for 24 months or 30,000 kilometers. But it's worth every cent, because besides the 2-year factory warranty, we offer this Ducati Ride Plan, which is a full maintenance plan that covers everything on your bike except your tires and cosmetic issues, unless it's a warranty claim again. If, I mean, if there's a problem with a tire and it's warranty claim from whoever, it'll be covered, you understand? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a good thing to have. A lot of people do service plans, but service plans do not cover everything.
So this would cover more of the consumables in terms of not necessarily, let's say, your normal oils and that, but things like brake pads and rotors,
Train links, everything. And that. Really? It's the same as, and I've always got to use the luxury car market, it's the same like buying a Porsche or a BMW or Mercedes with their motor plan. Now, the BMW has a motor plan, I think it's 5 years, 100,000 kilometers. Mm. It's exactly the same concept. Okay. It covers everything on the bike.
But it's just not going to cover your fuel and tires?
No, fuel and tires it won't cover. Everything else it will. As I said, if you damage something cosmetically, I mean, that's to your account.
No, of course, yes.
But yeah, if something cosmetically is damaged and it's a factory fault, then it's covered by warranty again.
Mm. Yeah, warranty covers that side 100%, of things. So.
Yeah.
And I mean, 10,000 Rand for 2 years and 30,000 kilometers isn't much.
It,
I mean, the bikes, as we know, and I think we can all admit, you're on the pricier end of the scale. It is a more exclusive brand.
Yeah.
And 10,000 Rand on top of that investment of your motorcycle
is
really nothing for that additional peace of mind.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not to say that servicing and maintenance of a Ducati is expensive, but I think that's just going to go a long way in sort of solidifying that trust that you're trying to gain back by going out to the consumers and saying, listen, guys, it doesn't have to be expensive to own one. You may have been burnt in the past, whether it was a dealer issue or was a product issue or just something of the sort, you know, miscommunication. You don't have to worry about that. You can come to us now and we're actually going to look after you.
Sure.
Well, I know firsthand that one of the, if we can go back in history a little bit, one of the things that that the guys were complaining about most was the inconsistency in the servicing and the pricing and the parts and the availability am I right in assuming that is also why it will remain your branches, your inner, so it's Ducati. So if you're opening a branch in Cape Town, you have full control over the pricing, the how it gets done, so you keep that consistency, basically, which has been, because that is something that harmed, I think, the brand in the past.
Yeah. When we opened up 2 years ago, or just 2.5 years ago, motorcycle businesses approached us to become a partner and become franchise or what they call multi-brand partner. And we didn't want to go that route from the word go. Our strategy plan was to have our own company-owned branches throughout the country. And the reason for that is because we want to be in full control of the service levels and everything that goes on. Once you go into a third party, you don't have full control anymore. You don't own that business. They pay you a fee or whatever the case may be. But it's for a brand like Ducati, it's quite risky.
You've got
to have full control. And that way you'll know exactly what's going on and how to sort it out, et cetera, et cetera.
Especially with the clientele that you're aiming at. They're looking for that all-encompassing, one sort of one-stop shop
quite
package.
Good.
And if I speak to you, in a sense, and incorrectly so, I think sometimes, they want to know that Robert down the road there knows exactly what he was talking about to Dave, three blocks down.
If they're both
Ducati, I want to be part of that family, and that family needs to know what I'm about.
Correct.
And not just, okay, well, I'm terribly sorry, we're washing our hands of that because we're a franchise.
Yeah.
Or terribly sorry, they're a franchise
Which
and we can't help.
So much.
It happens a lot. It happens more than, and it's not a good way of doing business, I feel.
My perspective is, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, is that when it comes to lifestyle type brands or high-end brands like Ducati, Porsche, Ferrari, you got to have that consistency.
That's it.
You know, if you're buying a Tag Heuer watch, you don't really want to go to somebody that's not that doesn't know what they're talking about.
I think it's the clientele. The clientele tends to be very brand loyal.
Yeah.
When it's at that stage,
they're
either an MV fan or they're a Ducati fan.
Yeah.
And they're going to sort of stick to that, and it's going to take a lot to sway them. And they want to just know that once I've entered this family, there I said, almost like the Italian mafia, I'm not getting out of it.
Yeah.
But I'm not married to it, and it's not going to end in tears.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy being there, and I'm going to want to stay there.
Johnny, I have an idea for you, though.
Yeah.
But we'll...
This could be trouble.
And I actually didn't know this. I want to vent a little bit, too. Do you know that there's apps out already where in the car side, not in the bike side, where you can book your car in for servicing and... So it's what they call it. This is not the conference we were this morning. They call it like immediate interaction with a consumer. So people, if you want to book your bike or car for service, you want to do it now.
I think there's a term for that in today's age. It's called instant gratification, and every single young person that's growing up wants instant gratification.
Yeah. So you're millennials.
This is like water flowing down you.
Did you know there's already
there's lots of brands in the world that do that, but I think South Africa, has a little way to go before we start seeing it too much.
Yeah, but let me explain this to you. I was shocked. Toyota has got an app, and apparently for quite a while already. And I have been a Toyota client for 10 years. So we were saying this morning, how does it help having something like that, which is so instant and which is so great for your consumer, for the client you already have? You don't have to go look for a new one.
I think the challenge isn't the application. The application's easy to build. The challenge is the service on the other end. So somebody actually kind of taking that information and doing something with it. Because now when you've got instant gratification, you pick up your phone, you book a service, you expect instant service.
And woe betide thee if there
you
isn't.
Don't give it.
Yeah.
So I think there's a bit of a balance where the floodgates will open at some point. Toyota's probably being optimistically cautious.
Well, according to the innovation group, they've been quite active with it and they've been marketing it. And I'm like, but where? I haven't seen it.
No,
and Johnny and
have
you actually seen it?
Do
you
know
about that?
I haven't seen it, but taking Toyota into account as a brand and the strength that they've got in South Africa and where they have their strength, they've got strong strength in fleet. So the chances are you're going to see implementation roll out in the likes of fleet management, rental, hire, and that type of thing.
Yeah, but the app's
not
there for that.
Before they pass it on to, not necessarily, I'm just saying
in terms
of...
The app's there for me and you.
Well, why wouldn't a fleet manager use it?
No, no, they would. But what I'm saying there, it's there for me and you. Mm. But I don't know about it. I haven't seen it. I don't know how it works.
Yeah,
I
yeah love there hasn't been any marketing on it, huh?
They're saying there has been. So what I'm saying is I love the concept. I promise you, this is they're saying it's been marketed. Well, I'm like, I don't agree. But can you imagine you're a Ducati client and you're like, oh, I want a test ride. I want instant app. I want to see when I can book it. Mm. And Johnny, I mean, you're quicker than an app because when I asked you if I can test ride it, that was great. But if you want to book a service, those kind of things, if handled well, it could be great. Absolutely. For our type of consumers, wouldn't you agree?
I think you're talking to the wrong person here because I come from the old school and I still like one-on-one personal chat. You know, how you Mike, how you doing, you know, and not through all this.
Yeah.
Please don't take me.
If you're selling a Ferrari.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's
come
probably,
in for the coffee.
Yeah. You know, you're selling a Ducati. Yeah. It's a personal thing.
Yeah. I want to talk to you personally. Yes, I want to talk to George. I don't want to talk to you through a cell phone or application or even an email. You know, yes, email is good to have things in writing, to keep it in writing. But when it comes to the actual conversation, I always pick up a phone and phone.
You want to know that you can
talk to the person.
That you can pick up the phone and you can
not this
read
WhatsApp relationship.
Expression
on interesting. Maybe we can put that out to the public. What do you think?
Yeah, then nobody can say yes, sir, but I did send you the email. I did leave a voicemail on your phone. You know, you can never prove those things. And I suppose if you really do, you could. But when you've spoken to somebody, there's no more nonsense.
Yeah.
You can't say,
that's
but
tangible.
I didn't speak to you.
Yeah. Johnny, some do.
Yeah.
Some still do.
You know, you know what the irony of the whole situation is that, and I mean, George, you understand that this from a digital, you know, brand sort of perspective, is that as much as you want instant gratification and you want a user-friendly app or a website, something of that sort, and especially on social media, you're wanting to go out there and you're wanting to have this presence, but there still needs to be that human factor to it.
Yeah.
You're still wanting to have that. Okay, I need to know that Auto Trader is actually a human entity, you know, that there are actual humans running it. So they want to have that, hey, George, how are you doing? Thanks for your query. We're going to reply to you as soon as we can. We love your ideas. You know, that one-on-one interaction.
Look,
I still think it depends on the brand.
I was going to say that now. So are you saying that basically it depends on the brand?
Depends on the brand.
You know,
and it depends on the consumer. I think it's a combination of those two. You know, if you get a 18-year-old kind of walking in wanting to buy a Ducati, it's probably a little bit different to a 40-year-old who wants that personal interaction with Johnny.
Yeah. I've been to quite a few of your Auto Trader's functions, launching new ideas and so on, and I like what Auto Trader does. I've been a big fan of Auto Trader for many years in the motor trade, and so what you guys are doing, you have to do it that way. You've got thousands and thousands of customers, and it's impossible for you guys to be one-on-one with every customer. It's crazy. You just call. So what you guys do is absolutely spot on. But with a brand like Ducati, we still in that frame where we can still give that one-on-one with every customer.
And you want to
keep
prefer
that. It that way.
Yeah.
Well, if we get to a point where we're selling 10,000 bikes a month, well then, we'll have to change our thinking then. Right? But for as long as we're selling what we're selling, we like to still keep it very, very personal.
And that now makes sense in the sense that you don't want to go with franchise or littered, you know, opportunities in terms of dealerships. And you want to keep it all self-contained and actual branches, you know, that are reporting and responsible to head office.
Yeah.
You know, that you've got that control. It speaks volumes for the brand as a whole.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, just coming from an outsider's point of view as well, it would give me that peace of mind as well. You know, knowing that I'm dealing with you, I'm getting that one-on-one interaction. You're going to recall me if I walk into the store, if I pick up the phone again and chat to you. You're going to know what we're talking about. And I'm going to know that I'm getting the same level of service and attention no matter where I go.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I'm just curious because you were mentioning earlier about the price of the bikes. Johnny, sorry, I can't remember the price of the Panigale, the 959 now.
$180 There's a 2,000 rand difference between the red and white. The white is 2,000 rand more. 183 and 181.
So if you consider that, it's not a lot. Do you know what the new ZX10 goes for example?
Yeah, almost 280.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so
the 1299 S is 269.
Okay.
So it's still just under the 300 mark. Still less than the.
I find that actually quite surprising because, you know, you sit there and as George is, you know, implying, is that the Ducati is also, it's the Ferrari of the motorcycle world. But you're sitting there.
I suppose
we've got
to refer to it as the Porsche of the.
We should stop referring it to the Ferrari. Actually.
No, I like the Ferrari.
It's the Italian side. You'd rather stay with the Italian side than the German
side.
No problem.
I hope my boss is not listening.
He's a busy man. I think he's safe.
Yeah.
But it's great to see that the pricing isn't as...
ridiculous. That's what you think. Huh?
I don't want to go with ridiculous as such. I suppose that's a
good term. Unaffordable, yeah.
But no, as varied. As what it is in, let's say, the motor world, where, you know, you can sit there and hover around the 800,000 to 1.3 million rand and get a good performance car. But if you're wanting a proper performance car, you need to look post 2 million. You know?
Yeah.
You know, there's a big gap there. Yeah. There's a massive gap that you can squeeze a house into, literally.
Mm.
And it doesn't seem to be there in the bikes. Mm. You know, you can sit there and choose whether you're going to go with one of your Japanese superbikes or you're going to go with an Italian superbike, and the pricing's roughly the same. And it now actually comes down to the way that the bike feels, the way it makes you feel, and, of course, the level of service you're getting.
Yeah. I think what's pushed up the, and I don't want to speak on behalf of the Japanese bikes, but, and I respect any brand and make on the market. I have no issues with nobody.
We're vehicle lovers.
I respect everybody. There's no backbiting anybody. But I think what's pushed up the Japanese brand so high now on their superbikes, on the Yamaha R1 and the Kawasaki, is previously, and they never had electronics on their bikes.
Mm.
And electronics are the expensive part. I mean, you take just the electronics on the rear suspension of a superbike or even a Multistrada, that's 40,000 rand on its own.
Wow.
Just the rear suspension. The Olin suspension and the electronics on that. So you take a new Panigale today, it's got 4 different modes with 8 different settings on each mode. There's a lot of electronics. There's wheelie control. There's launch control.
It's got everything.
There's ABS brakes. There's, what's the other one? Lean control, wheelie control, launch control. There's just so many functions now where before the Japanese bikes never had those functions, and that's what kept them, their prices exceptionally affordable.
Yeah.
But now if you take the previous generation of, for example, Yamaha R1, which was always selling round about the 150, 160 mark, now it's like 280. It's like nearly triple.
It's a massive
jump. Nearly double, sorry. More than double, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think it's now that they're just trying to absorb those initial research and development costs,
the R&D costs? They've got
initially?
To go that route. Eh?
Do you think the prices may come down as the technology that they're putting into the bikes starts becoming, I don't want to say second hand, but starts becoming commonplace?
Yeah. It's like anything. It's like TVs when they came out,
now.
Like cell phones. Eventually, those prices will come down. It won't be so harsh anymore.
Well, forget self-driving cars. We're going to have self-driving bikes.
I was going to say.
I was at the launch of the ZX10 as well, and just going through it after the fact and just reading the amount of tech that has gone into it now,
it really amazed
me. And I said, there is just so much more. It wasn't that long ago, and maybe I'm just giving my age away, it wasn't so long ago that we were still running carbs.
Yeah.
You know, that fuel injection is still a recent thing. Now, let's go with the off-road side of things, and fuel injection is still almost a dark science in the off-road sector, in the off-road world.
Even in airplanes. Airplanes are probably lagging everything. You know, there's still carburetor-driven aircraft and single-engine.
I think there's considerably more R&D that needs to be done in terms of reliability on an aircraft.
That's true.
Needed with...
I'm not talking about the jets now. I'm talking about the single props. But it's absolutely amazing, the technology that is coming into these bikes and cars.
Well,
I mean,
we're living
the other day,
in a fantastic age.
I don't know if you saw the video. Somebody posted a YouTube video where he took a Tesla. And with his Apple Watch, he made that Tesla open the garage, reverse the car out, and park it in the front to wait for him.
Okay, but what's the purpose, really? Just
well,
for YouTube video?
I'm busy getting dressed. Go park yourself in the street so that I can go.
You know what? For me, all this technology is great, and I get it, because I've raced without it and I've raced with it, traction control specifically. So I understand the difference of it. But for novice riders, for example, as well, you're not going to use even two sections of it, probably mostly one mode. So yes, it's great. All of that is great. Mm. And Johnny, it doesn't necessarily, I'm sure you would agree, make it a safer motorbike with all this new stuff. In some ways it
Wouldn't
does.
Wouldn't you say that it makes it a safer motorbike for the inexperienced?
Yes and no. Because
I mean, anti-wheelie control. I mean, I just put me on a 1,000cc bike now and I'm probably going to sit on my bum.
Okay, but I'm going to give you the statistics. How many incidents do you think there is from wheelies and how many is it from a lack of just understanding how to ride properly?
Probably the latter.
Yeah. Exactly. So look, all these things are great. I agree with it.
I think
from
the combination
training,
is dangerous though. The
training with that is wonderful. It's excellent. You need that. So just the point I'm getting to as well, when people come to you for test rides, how do you gauge now? Because we all know you have your learner's piece of paper. That does not mean
you know
you
how to
can ride. Yeah.
So where do you draw the line, Johnny? Or do you just take the chance and let whoever needs to test ride? How does it work?
It's a risk. And it's just what you've just said. You've got to take the chance. You know, in the car business, we still run a car business next door to us. And a car business is different because when a customer comes for a test ride, you go with the customer as a
passenger.
And you
hold the handbrake.
Yeah, and if he's driving or she's driving recklessly, you can always just say, wow. I mean, I chased once a customer out of the car because he was just driving stupid, very, very dangerously. And I said, wow, that's enough. That's enough. Yeah. I'll take over now. Yeah. But the bike you can't go with, so you've got to just take the chance. Mm. And in the 2.5 years that we've been operating, we've had one customer that fell off.
Wow.
And damaged the bike. Well, also damaged himself.
How does he come back into the showroom?
He didn't. He went straight to hospital. Yeah, but it was a youngster with his learners. And I don't know, quite know if it was his fault or not, but that's
the thing.
It's just what happens.
It could be
but
outside
influences. You've got to take the risk. You've got to take the chance. There's nothing. We have a route where we tell the customers, you know, where to drive. And some people do want to take it on the highway, you know, with special arrangements. But it's a risk that you take.
So how do you go about doing test rides? I mean, what bikes do you have available?
We have one model of each as a demo bike available at all times. The only time the bike's not available is if it's somebody like you that's come to fetch the bike on a test ride for the media and so on. Okay. But other than that, there's one bike of each model available at all times for a test ride. Mm. All a customer must just do is just phone us first just to make sure the bike is there. Because we'd hate somebody to come all the way from Pretoria and they get there and the bike's not there. You know?
Yeah, that terrible drive down the M1.
Yeah, so that, M1. Like I said, the only time the bike's not there is if it's one of the media's taking it. And that also only happens during the early stages of the bike when it's launched. Mm. Like now with the 959. Mm. Within the next 2 months, it's going to be out on the road all the time with different media. But we also make a point that Fridays and Saturdays, it's got to be in-house because that's when we do most of our test rides. Yes. So if the media takes the bikes, it must be between a Monday and a Thursday, but it must be back by late Thursday afternoon. Mm. So, of course, especially Saturdays. Saturdays, we have a lot of people doing test rides.
Yes, And whereabouts is your dealership based for those that are listening that want to swing by and take a look?
Well, this is head office.
It's basically head office and a retail store, our only retail store for now, in Randburg on Brown Fisher Drive, the older ex-Porsche building, which obviously is still owned by Toby Fenter. That's corner Dover and Brown Fisher. Very near to the Randburg Square. In the old days, we used to call it the Sunlum Centre, you know? Yes. But that's gone now.
That's long. Sunlum as well. They're also long gone.
I still call it the Sunlum Centre. People are like, look at me, hey, where is that?
Where is that? Yeah, no, it does.
But yeah, we got a beautiful store there, lovely store. Mm-hmm. Got really, really one of the best stores in the world. And most probably the second biggest store in the world.
You're talking apparel?
No.
Everything. With the bikes, everything.
Bikes, showroom, the whole lot, yeah. Wow. I mean, they've got one store in India, which is per square meter is bigger than ours, but they're 5 stories high. So they've got these small stores, but with 5 stores on top of each other, which I think is very, very inconvenient and
especially
very impractical.
Especially when you're trying to get bikes up
third silly.
Floor.
It's silly. It doesn't make sense to me. But we're spoiled in South Africa because we've got space.
We do have the space.
And if I look at some of the Ducati stores in Italy itself, I mean, wow, they're like real, real It's as big as my office, so, you know.
It's a kiosk. Yeah. You can order your bike and they'll deliver it to you, but you'll never get to see it.
All the bikes are touching each other. You can't sit on it. Wait, let me pull it out.
Yeah.
Have you seen, have you actually been to Ducati, George?
I haven't been to the store, no.
Okay, so we're going to have to take you because you will fall in love with the apparel. I mean, a couple of years ago, I went to Bologna to the factory there, and I couldn't stop swiping my card. It's like bikinis, and it's this, and it's and it dummies. I mean, you even you have everything you can think of for babies up to...
It's a lifestyle. It's
I'm going to come and try Johnny's coffee. So
you pop around the George. I'm waiting for you.
Absolutely.
All right, folks. Well, Johnny, thank you very much for chatting, and absolutely fantastic to hear what the plans are for Ducati in South Africa, and that things are going well. The new models do sound exciting, and I think that we do have a little bit of content up on the site available.
Yeah, we do. We've got 70 Ducatis on the site today, 54 of which are from Johnny. So, so thank you.
Oh, that's on there. Yeah. Oh, cool. So you really do support Auto Trader. Not just talk.
Yeah. Well, we're going to cut there quickly and just going to run. We're going to touch base with, we're going to move on to four wheels. Just going to do the review. Our review this week is, of course, the Polo GTI. And George, you said that you were actually also quite keen to hear about this
I've always loved the GTI. And when VW decided to make the Polo, I was like, what are they going to do here? And all they did was upgrade the GTI, and they left the old GTI, kind of, in my opinion, as the Polo GTI.
As the Polo, yeah.
And it's still a phenomenal car.
Well, because the first one had the, what was the AUG motor? It was the 1.8 litre 20 valve motor. It was turbocharged, and that was in the 9N3. And a pretty good car. And I'll tell you what, in terms of power to weight, was a lovely little car. And it really was, exactly like you say, it was one of those cars that just set a new benchmark almost, it set a new trend going. And then they brought out 6R, and that was the one following it. And that one, actually, they scaled down on the motor. So they went down to the 1.4 litre motor, and they made a twin charge. So they had a supercharger and a turbocharger. I mean, we're talking very Lancia Stratos sort of stuff here, 037. Yeah. And very interesting approach. It was massively economical. It had the fuel economy of a diesel, but the power of like a 2 liter turbo. It was a fantastic motor. Actually, made more power than the 1.8 liter that.
Well,
it,
talking about power, isn't the first GTI ever made the, remember the Golf Rabbit?
Yes.
Which apparently was the quickest Golf GTI until recently, because of the weight that they had to pack onto the cars.
I can come in on that one.
Yeah, please do.
In
please
1976, when I was at Paul Ricard Grand Prix in France, they had just brought out the Golf 1 GTI.
Yeah.
Yes, that little black grille with a little red stripe around the grille. Very, very potent car. But at that time, it was a 1.6, and then they brought out the 1.8 carbureted.
Yes, yeah.
And it was very quick, was and very it's true quick. What you say, that the body weight. I mean, I had one myself in South Africa.
It's a beautiful
car. Very, very quick. But yeah, the one that you're talking about now with the supercharged, turbocharged 1.4. That pushes a lot of kilowatts.
That one was strong. Yeah. I mean, that one came in 132, if I'm not mistaken, 132 kilowatts.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much the same power that you were getting out of the 1.8-litre Golf 4 GTI.
Yeah.
But that said, it's not lugging around the weight of the Golf 4 GTI, because that's what it was. It was definitely, like you say, power to weight.
Yeah. I think it was after the Golf 4 that they started improving. Because
the Golf 5 was definitely considerably stronger, and that it was still a big car. And the Golf has gotten to be quite a large car. It's no longer that petite little economical sort of compact little vehicle. That's now moved over to the Polo, and that's where the Polo has that appeal to the youngsters and the youth looking for a performance orientated hatchback, where the Golf has sort of left off. So there's been a bit of a crossover there with VW.
And that's what I like about that Golf, or should I say that VW Polo GTI, is it's still kept its little Golf Rabbit kind of style.
That's it,
And it's quick, it's a little pocket rocket, and it's a beautiful little car.
You sound like a real fan.
I am a fan of a GTI, I am.
Well, myself too, and that's why I know a lot about that.
And it is. I mean,
and I've owned two, so...
Have you had? You've had two, all right.
Very potent.
Well, we had last year we had the DSG. So this is now with the new, basically, Polo GTI, and they've bumped the motor up. They dropped the supercharge, and they went back to a 1.8. So now it's a 1.8 turbocharged motor. Very much the same.
Why?
As... I think a lot of it has to do with emissions regulations, and they also...
Which we know we don't really have in this country.
We don't have locally, but, I mean, these vehicles are still imported, so, you know, they're still conforming to EU specification. It's also using a modified E888 engine block. And that's the same sort of engine block that you are going to get in the Golf GTI. So I think it's all about keeping the molding and the, you know, the basically the manufacturing process, streamlining that so that there's, you know, so you're sitting with, and Volvo's doing the same. They're going to have one block, and just depending on which head they put on it and which ancillaries they bolt onto it, it'll either be a 2 liter petrol or a 2 liter diesel.
Yeah. But I suppose it's efficient.
It's efficiency.
It's efficient. Yeah. You can have multiple spec cars on the same assembly line.
VW's doing that with the platforms as well. Mm. You're getting the MLB, the MQB chassis, which is now basically transformable, so you can adjust the width of it and the length of it, and that can give you everything from a Golf 7 GTI to a Q7.
Didn't Toyota do that with the Hi-Ace, Fortuna,
yes,
and Bucky?
I was going to say, now some of
that was more just the ladder chassis.
But we were talking about that this morning. A lot of it is being done again by the OEM for price wise, to get all the costs in that down,
Which is good.
And some there's even crossovers with manufacturers.
So the inside of this GTI.
Very good. Very good. I mean, they've bumped the power up in that, and they've updated the interior, you know, to go along with it. It's got a half leather sort of arrangement on the inside. Very good.
Are they still into their Recaro seats or?
Yes. Not so much the tombstone design.
Yeah.
It's still now a three-piece style back, but it is nice and form-hugging. It lacks a little bit of adjustment, in my personal opinion, but you've got to remember that this is now their little sub-hatch. It's not going to have all the bells and whistles.
DSG gearbox?
That we first tested the DSG gearbox. 141 kilowatts, 250 newton meters of torque, and had to limit the torque to 250 newton meters because of the gearbox.
If I remember correctly, you're not a fan of the DSG. It's not as quick changing as...
And that's where we sit, because the review that we did and the one that we're actually advertising is of the manual now. It's the manual. So it's 1.8 liter turbocharged manual. Polo GTI.
Driver input.
Yeah.
Lots of driver input. Like it's a driver's car.
It is a driver's car. The power stays the same. 141 kilowatts.
Turbo lag?
Minimal.
Minimal turbo
lag. Fortunately with the turbos, twin scroll turbos and that they're running, it's considerably better.
Because I remember my GTI had big turbo lag. Pardon?
Four or five.
No, this was the Golf 2, I think it was. Golf 2 or Golf 3. It was the jumbo-shaped Golf GTI.
Yeah.
Golf 3, yeah.
Golf 3, yes. Golf 3. Yeah. And that had a big turbo lag. It was an 1800 motor.
Yeah.
And it had quite a big turbo lag.
Yeah. Now, yes?
No, carry on.
The manual, though, has, instead of the 250 newton meters, has 320 newton meters.
Oh, wow.
So there's 70 newton meter hike because it's not restricted by the gearbox now, which makes a difference to the driving. But in my first review of it, I said that, well, Volkswagen came out and said, we're releasing the DSG. It's got 250 newton meters. The manual's coming later. It's going to have 70 more newton meters. It's going to have 320. But there's not going to be any difference in the performance. Performance is going to be the same. And in my first review of the DSG, I sat there and I said, well, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. 70 newton meters, you're going to feel it. In a small chassis like that, how can they say that there's not going to be a difference in performance? I later on found out why, and it's because the DSG arrangement allows the motor to stay in boost between gears. With a manual, as soon as you dip the clutch, it opens up the wastegate, it drops all the boost, and you have to build that boost
that
up again.
Sense.
So there's a bit of a sort of camel hump sort of approach to the power. You make power, you lose it. You make power, you lose it. And you have to keep on spooling that turbo back up again. And that's now where I can understand that the performance figures, the 0 to 100, the quarter mile sprint and all that,
it's
is going to be the same. So they're on par. And if you're wanting to just do robot to robot, straight line, plow through the gears as fast as you can, go with the DSG.
DSG. Yeah.
If you're going to sit in traffic, go with the DSG. Yeah. If you're going to be throwing it around a couple of turns and you want to just be involved with it, go with the manual, because the in-gear acceleration, you can feel the 70 newton meters. And that was the biggest difference for me, was the fact that in gear, as long as you got it in that gear, what you do with that throttle just makes a world of difference. Whereas with the DSG, you don't quite have that sort of sense of occasion or sense of urgency per se.
Yeah.
But I will say this, I sat in the manual one and I was driving it, just sitting in traffic, and I had a moment that I'm almost embarrassed to admit, and I sat there and I said, I actually wish I was in a DSG.
There we go. So there we go. From a man that's been converted.
Absolutely. Now, I'm not going to say converted. I still don't believe in it wholeheartedly in the DSG. I like to be involved with the driving of it. But in terms of practicality and
our
usability,
conditions is just not real world. For the manual. Exactly.
Yeah, real world and sitting in traffic and that, the DSG makes sense because you're going to be sitting in traffic 90% of the time. And you're only going to get that small little 10% where you're going to be able to give it a squirt, to throw it around a couple of bends, you know, be able to really stretch its legs. And it's only that 10% that you're going to say, maybe the manual would be better. The rest of the time, you're going to be thankful that you're in a DSG.
But I absolutely love those GTIs, specifically that Polo.
It is. I mean, it's fantastic. Now, here comes in the slight difference. So the DSG is going to cost you 341,000 Rand. Current pricing as of today. The manual, 325. So yes, considerably cheaper. But then you want to spec it. So you want to put in the LED lighting pack. And this is where I feel that the Germans are getting things a little bit wrong. And it's not just VW. We're seeing it with Audi, BMW, Mercedes-Benz
Audi's been kind of good at that. They've spec'd their cars up to now. Mm. You know, it's
When it's not in there, you pay.
Yeah, true.
But Audi's always come with a very highly spec car up to now.
For the most part, I had a Q7 recently. The options alone on the Q7, 220,000 Rand.
Wow.
For extras.
And that didn't include the 170,000 Rand seating option. That wasn't checked. Yeah.
So fully spec'd Golf, fully spec'd Polo GTI, what would we go for?
In the manual, you're looking at 364. And you can add another 20K to that, 384, almost 400,000 Rand for a spec'd DSG. And one of the things that just got to me, and you were talking about the interior, Climatronic. Your climate control, digital climate control, 3,650 Rand is an option.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be an option. I'm sorry. If it's the top of the range Polo, I don't care if it's the Polo and it's your sub hatch. If it's the top of the range one, simple stuff like climate control and maybe a sports setting should be included in it. You know, I can understand spec a sunroof, spec LED lights, you know, extra creature comforts.
Yeah.
But the climate control in South Africa.
At the end of the day, it is a Polo GTI.
No. you won't drive it now, will you?
No, of course
I will. And you know what? Let's be perfectly
climate
controls
aren't going to put me off a Polo GTI.
No. Oh, come now. Just for a while. Just for a week.
And the thing is, I mean, let's be perfectly honest here. In South Africa, you can't go wrong with buying it either.
Nope.
Because you know it's going to hold its value. It is. You're going to be able to get... Even Duncan's nodding in the back there. Even he knows. Oh, yeah, there's resale value on that Polo GTI.
Look, does anything really keep its value? I mean, I know this is for a whole nother debate, but...
Property.
I mean...
You got to buy land now because they stopped making it a long time
no,
ago.
No, property also doesn't everywhere. I'm talking about cars.
No, any sort of asset that can actually move is going to depreciate.
No, come with all the cars now that you get. I mean, they still, doesn't matter if you keep it for a year, 2 years, 3 years. I mean, you still,
you gotta,
they give you only so much trading.
You've got to understand something. You're using it up.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're using it up means it's going to lose value. There's no such thing as an investment in a movable asset.
No, there isn't anymore. That's why I don't see how much of it.
It's just the varying depreciation rates. So the Polo GTI, for instance, holds its value a lot longer. And the reason it holds its value a lot longer is because these guys are coming out of university and school, and those are the cars they're going for.
Yeah. There's aspirational value to it as well. South Africa is very status orientated in terms, very brand conscious.
It used to be Corsa.
I mean, on the top end of the range, Porsche holds its value really well, but that's down to Toby kind of keeping the servicing and the warranties up. So there's a lot of factors, but Porsche depreciates, Ducati will depreciate, GTIs will depreciate.
They all
depreciate.
But then you get brands like, I don't want to slate them, but you get some brands that depreciate as fast as they accelerate. You know,
which ones are those?
Sadly, some French ones, and some Italians as well.
Are they assembled? Yeah.
No, it's high, and it was actually something, and Johnny, just one last question here. Any concerns with regards to pricing and that and the way that the interest rate is going?
Don't talk too loud. We don't want the Italians to hear you. No, we're still okay. Eh? Our prices on our parts and apparel has gone up, but our bike prices are still firm from where they are from November last year, which they gave us. They determine the prices for the countries.
Okay.
And we get invoiced out in rands. We're really lucky with that, not in euro.
Well, there we go.
So we still We're still based on the 15, I think around about the 15 rand per euro. That's where we've based our prices on.
Oh, wow.
So I mean, that's where the dollar
so if you, yeah. If you if you're in the market for a Ducati, go and get it while the stock lasts.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, how often would they be looking at a price revision in terms
they
of the
They only
Ducati
do
range?
It once a year.
Okay.
But with the rand going so weak, I've got a strong feeling that it's going to take a change very soon.
But also, I suppose it depends on how much stock you've got, because as soon as you have to import more stock, or, you know, is that fixed?
We do a plan for the whole year,
okay,
which we give the factory, but we try not to keep more than 2 months stock,
okay,
2 to 3 months. So, but we do keep every bike, every color, every model in stock, so you don't have, when you want a bike, it's there.
It's there, yeah.
Okay. Johnny, I just want to quickly ask you, because I know we need to close up now, but what do we have to look forward to, that you've got two or three launches coming up, just quickly?
Two big ones. Out of the nine, two big ones, and that's the X-Diavel that's arriving next month. That is a direct sort of competition against the American market, you know, with the with your foot pegs up front
and your hands
low
even
down
higher.
And sit down. Yeah, that's going to be a very, very popular bike, the X-Diavel. Complete new model. It's part of the Diavel family, but it's a totally new model on its own. And then in May, that's also going to be a very big one. Also new to the Ducati range is the Multistrada Enduro, which is your extreme off-road adventure bike. The one that we got now is not extreme.
Yeah.
It's sort of semi, but the Enduro is going to be extreme off-road.
Your KTM companion.
Yeah, and your BMW GS and so on, yeah.
Well, I'm excited.
So, yeah, those are the two big ones.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And we will keep you updated with that. If you do want to catch up on the review that we're chatting about, don't forget to follow Auto Trader on all the social media channels. It's at Auto Trader SA. You can like us on Facebook. You can go and follow, subscribe to our YouTube channel and catch all our motoring reviews and news there. You can also go and follow Ducati South Africa, although you just need to go to the website, ducati.co.za.
Well, what is your Twitter handle?
Ducati SA.
We'll put it out there
Ducati
just now.
Ducati SA. And yeah. Ducati
Thank
SA.
You, George.
We'll put it out there. But, yeah, well, we're unfortunately running out of time in that, but do please go and follow Auto Trader, and thank you for listening to Auto Central. We will be back next week, same time, same place, here on Cliff Central, 1 to 2 p.m. on a Wednesday. Big thank you to SA Speed Queen, to George Mini, and Johnny Arouge from Ducati South Africa. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be with you next time. My name's Chad Lukoff. Have fun. Stay safe.
This is CliffCentral.com.